Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Eliza Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Everybody, it's Mary Brotherton. It's Thursday night. You know, I love me some Thursday nights because I get to talk to some really cool people. And tonight I'm going to be talking with Ray Ellen. And I never heard of Ray before. I'm sorry, Ray. I just never heard of you before. But
oh,
I know
thanks.
A lot more. Sorry. I had never heard of Comedy Cloud either. Or what was the other one I wanted to talk to you about? Oh, your Aruba Rays Comedy Club. Man, after I got to know a little bit about you, I was more eager to talk with you.
That's good. That's nice.
Yeah, I have two pressing questions, though. I'm not even going to try to introduce you because people can go online to thecomedyclub.co or arubacomedy.com. They can just type in Ray Ellen, E-L-L-I-N, and boom, there you are.
There I am. There's plenty of stuff, I believe, if you go. I haven't Googled myself lately. Sometimes when I'm alone laying in bed, I'll do a little Google. But, no, I haven't Googled myself lately, and but there's stuff there for sure. ComedyCloud.co, that's actually really cool. During the pandemic, I started Comedy Cloud as a way to do for comedians to perform online on Zoom, and it turned into this thing where we did over 140 shows for different companies. Yeah, it was really great. So different companies could connect workers that had been working remotely. So it was a way to sort of reward employees and just keep everybody, you know, in touch with each other. And everyone is on Zoom so much, and doing stand-up shows and live comedy shows is just a totally different way for people to interact on Zoom and to engage with people that have been, you know, working all day at their desk in a real fun way is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the comedians that are on these shows, everybody's been on, you know, Conan and The Tonight Show and Netflix and HBO, like these are top-level comedians. One of the guys was the winner of Last Comic Standing. Another guy was the runner-up in America's Got Talent. So Comedy Cloud has amazing performers, and it was really great. Sometimes you'd have maybe 12 people watching the show. Sometimes you'd have 900. Typically it was around, you know, 150 to 200 people. But we did shows for all types of companies, tech companies and law firms and finance companies and ad agencies and all sorts of stuff. And it was great. It was really, they're really fun. We're starting to do more because people have holidays coming up, and so a lot of companies still don't want to meet up in person. So we have a bunch of shows lined up for between Thanksgiving and late January. So it's
That's
exciting.
Cool.
I mean, I thought it was going to die down completely, but we still have it.
I know you have a house full of sisters. Are you the only brother?
I am. I'm the only boy. I'm the youngest. I had all older sisters.
How many?
I grew up with two older sisters, and I was growing up wearing hand-me-downs from them for whatever reason. I think my mother was like, you know, screw it. This kid's growing too fast.
Oh,
he's just
going to
wear what he's going to wear. And
who cares?
I have pictures of me wearing like a Hello Kitty T-shirt and a jacket with flowers on it. The zipper's on the other side. It's clearly not meant for a boy. And, you know, I just kind of rolled with it. What am I going to do? I kind of have no choice. I mean, I was four. But you know what did happen? My father used to give me haircuts when I was a kid. I guess maybe they wanted to save money. I don't know. But these were terrible haircuts. I mean, they looked very – they're bad. And one time my mother took me to a store, and I'm wearing my sister's hand-me-down, and I have the haircut my father gave me. And the cashier said to my mother, "Would your little girl like a lollipop?"
Oh, no.
And when she heard that, she's like, "You know what? You're not," she said to my dad, "you're not cutting his hair anymore, and it's time that we buy him his own clothes."
Oh, wow.
So, there, yeah, it was quite a sight.
Well, the reason I asked about your family is I come from a little bigger family than yours. I'm the fourth out of eight. I have four brothers and three sisters.
Catholic or Mormon, Mary?
Catholic. Irish, German, Scottish, Catholic. My father used to say we were like Heinz 57. You never knew what kind of blood ran through us.
Right, right.
Our grandfather was an actual clown in the Barnum and Bailey Circus. And I swear to God, it had to have been passed down through the boys. I mean, the females in the family like to joke around too. But when my brothers get together, the oldest one is now 70 and the youngest one's 55. My parents decided they had to populate the entire boomer generation.
Oh, but wow.
Those guys, from the time they were youngsters to now, they still get together and you think it's audition time for, you know, class clown or something. They're always trying to one-up each other. So I thought maybe when I knew, you know, I saw in your bio that you had a house full of older sisters, I thought maybe you were like the last kid or the middle kid out of 20, and you know that was the reason you were. But I know that people who have comedy in their makeup, people who are funny, you can't just shut it off because a pandemic is here.
Right.
So I applaud you for creating Comedy Cloud. That's really cool that you would come up with some way to say, you know what, I'm going to be funny, and these other guys are going to be funny, and I say guys. Plural, like folks. I grew up in the South. But, you know, it's like we can't just roll over and be serious now. In fact,
watching the news, and it was just scary and sad, and, you know, and you're alone in your homes. And, you know, and for comedians, I mean, we had that outlet when we were performing, you know, live, and suddenly that's taken away from us. And, you know, some comedians are loners. I'm very much a people person, and I like being around people. And it's just it's very challenging. And, you know, and the other thing is, you know, one of my sisters actually passed away the very beginning of the pandemic. So
sorry to hear that.
It was terrible. So I'm you know, alone in my apartment at a time when you really want to be with your family, obviously, and be there for your folks. So there's a global crisis going on, and then you have your own, the worst possible personal crisis, or certainly one of the worst. So doing the comedy shows online was a great outlet, not just to cope with the pandemic, but also with this terrible, you know, tragedy that happened right before we went into lockdown. So obviously, you know, my take on it is different now than it was, you know, over a year ago when this happened. But I do know, I mean, you know, it's just, I've always, I think when I do shows, a lot of people come to comedy shows and they've told me after the live show, they're like, "Wow, that was great. I've been in such a terrible place lately. That made me feel so good." And this is probably the first time that I really consciously was like, you know what, me performing, even if it's on Zoom, and just hearing other comedians performing with me, it was really therapeutic, and trying to keep busy as much as possible because it was a brutal, bizarre, surreal time, you know. But I'm very happy that started Comedy Cloud, and other comedians who I had, you know, perform, they were thrilled that they had the outlet, and also to make a little bit of a living as well, you know, during a time where everything was shut down. So
when you're a performer and you can't perform, there goes your livelihood.
Yeah, it sucks. It's pretty bad. And then the other thing was that even after, so I have the comedy club in Aruba, Aruba Ray's Comedy Club, which is arubacomedy.com, and that is So we do shows, this year it'll be from December 1st until mid-April, and it's, again, all the comedians have been on all major TV shows, and they're based mostly in New York, some in Boston, some in Los Angeles, and we do shows at this great venue in Aruba, and, you know, so when I went back to Aruba as soon as they opened up, I was still doing Zoom shows, but from Aruba. And then eventually the comedy club opened up, you know, and granted we had smaller crowds because tourism was down, you know, I was willing to like bring in, you know, iguanas and donkeys into the audience if that's what we needed. But it was, you know, so it was great. So it's like, okay, so I had the Aruba shows at Aruba Rays, and I had a lot of Zoom shows. And at the time there was nowhere to perform in America. It was crazy to think that, you know, so, you know, more than ever, there was a million comedians that wanted to come to Aruba just so, never mind to be, you know, on the beach, but also get to be on stage. So it was really, really interesting times, you know.
Well, it's cool that you could recreate yourself that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to keep moving forward no matter what you do in life, you know, whether you're a comedian or a car mechanic or, you know, and a librarian, whatever. Whenever there's a wrench thrown in the works, you got to figure out a way to solve it, you know, solve the problem. That was fun. You know, and now that things are back to normal, there was a wedding, a buddy of mine got married. It was a three-hour, it was in the Berkshires, so from New York, from Boston, it was a drive. Some people flew in from California. And the thing about it was I did shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The wedding was Sunday. And he got annoyed with me that I didn't go to the wedding on Saturday for the pre-wedding events. He was like, you're not coming to the hike. You're not coming to the yoga session. You're not coming out to the tattoo experience. I'm like, no, I'm not coming out to that stuff. I'll be there for your vows and the reception and all that fun stuff.
I'll be there for the booze. Leave me alone.
Yeah. I'll be there for the booze. So he got annoyed with me. I'm like, look, man, I bought you all the stuff in your registry. I got you, you know, a ladle and a crock pot, all this crap you're never going to use. Let's face it. If you put a fork, a whisk, and a ladle in front of this guy, he wouldn't know which one was the ladle, okay? So this registry was nonsense. You know, I made a donation to some charity they came up with. And to top it off, I didn't get a plus one. And I said, well, is there going to be any – I'm single. I was like, is there going to be any single women there? He goes, no, all my fiance's friends are married. I'm like, okay, so I can't bring anyone. You want me to bring hiking shoes because you're annoyed that I didn't go on the hike. So they wanted everybody to take a COVID test, and I really thought to myself, you know what, I should just call them up and be like, hey, I'm sorry, I tested positive. I can't make the wedding.
Oh man, that would have been horrible.
Oops, I'm positive. So I went to the wedding, and you know what? It was beautiful. Berkshires are gorgeous in the fall, and the ceremony was beautiful. Had a really nice time, good group of people. But we all parked our cars in like this in this big field. It was on an estate that was built in 1750, and we all parked our cars in this big field. And I was there late. You know, I was enjoying myself, you know, having a good time. You know, didn't drink too much, but it was really fun. Everybody leaves. I can't find my car. There's no lights on the field. So I'm walking, trying to walk around. On my smartphone, the flashlight stinks. I can't find my car, and I left the key in the car, so I couldn't push the button for it to light up. I can't leave the property. So I end up, this estate has a bunch of bedrooms. But it's from 1750, and it's creepy and creaking and terrifying. So I had to sleep in the house. I slept fully clothed in my suit, and I slept with the lights on because I'm terrified this place was haunted. And as soon as the crack of sunlight came through the window, I got up and I left, and I found my car. And had I tried to get to my car in the pitch black, there was a rock wall and a creek. I would have either, you know, slammed, or I would have walked off the rock wall, or I ended up in the creek. Quite frankly, yeah, I more than did my time at this wedding, even though I missed the yoga session.
I think you did okay without the yoga session.
Yeah, I think so.
That's really funny, though. I'm sorry. I laugh at other people's misfortune. Not normally, but the way you tell it makes it funny.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. You know, now when my friend listens to this, he's going to hear how disgusted I was with his wedding. But I got gifts. There's no single people for me to meet. And to top it off, I couldn't leave. I couldn't leave the premises. Come on now.
You were imprisoned there. And tell him that he needs to send you a picture of his ladle.
That's right. In use. He needs to show me this ladle being
used. Show you that he knows the proper way to use it.
Yes, absolutely.
He probably doesn't even know what ladle means.
He probably does. He certainly couldn't spell it. You can tell that.
Well, that's a word that a lot of people can't spell because the L and the E are backwards to what you would think. But that's why
I think
love
it's
English.
Label. I think it's L-A-B-E-L, B as in boy.
Yeah. That's why I love English, because it really messes up a lot of people's minds. You have to really think with some of the words. I wanted to ask you a question. This is important to me. Maybe I need to rethink my end-of-life career. Your blood pressure drops when you go on stage?
Oh, yeah. I was on Dateline on NBC, and they profiled me on Dateline, and they hooked up all these, like, monitors to me, and they kind of followed me throughout my day, and, like, both just hanging out and, like, on stage and everything. And they discovered that I become most relaxed when I'm on stage. Like, my blood pressure drops when I'm on stage, which is – I think that's probably pretty unusual for most people. So, you know, if I'm riding the subway or, you know, whatever, walking around New York or, you know, shopping, whatever, I was more relaxed being on stage performing. So
That was really cool.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, you know. I remember my reaction on the show. I was like, oh, my God, it went down? That's so cool. They should have had me hooked up to the monitors when I found out that my blood pressure drops. That's what they should have done. And watch it skyrocket.
That's when your blood pressure probably went up, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, what that tells me is that you are doing what you were meant to do.
I think so. I do think so. You know, I mean, I wasn't going to end up in the NBA or the NFL, although I would have preferred that. But yeah, I do think, I mean, I knew when I was really young. I mean, I made certain people, like family members, laugh when I was like 3-4 years old doing something silly, whatever it was. Obviously, I wasn't, you know, it wasn't a well-crafted material when I was 4 years old. But I just knew, and then like, and I think the first, I performed when I was 11 at my 6th grade graduation. I did a show, like a set when I was 11. And I just knew. I always really knew. I mean, I performed throughout high school and college, but it's just one of those things. It's really unusual that I second guessed it briefly. I had a conversation with my father, and told him I want to be a comedian. I was like 11 or 12, and he was like, you're not going to make any money, and it's not a good life, and whatever. And so for 3 days, I was going to be an orthodontist. I was going to be a hilarious orthodontist for 3 days. And I remember just being like, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be staring in, you know, people's mouths, looking at their messed up teeth.
Yeah, so, I mean, I hats off to my dentist. I never understood how anybody can enjoy that, but he seems to.
I don't quite get it. I mean, obviously, I guess it's lucrative, and they some people just get off on filling holes, I guess. But it wasn't for me.
I was having my teeth cleaned one day. This was pre-COVID, and the hygienist popped a little piece of plaque off one of my back teeth. And she says, oh, that's the most satisfying thing. I said, what? She said, look at this. She said, I popped this off, and it just popped right off your tooth without scraping and you know, drilling and whatnot. I said, what is that? She said, that's plaque. She said, it always makes me feel like I've succeeded in something when I can pop off a big piece like this. I said, it makes me think I need to go brush my teeth some more.
Sure. It's good. It's wonderful that your lack of brushing makes her feel accomplished.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm glad I could help, you know? You do what you got to – you do what you can, Ray.
Sure. That's all you can do, you know? You try to fulfill somebody else's
life by your own ineptitude.
Yeah. You know, look, I really do believe in general you have to do what you're into doing, and you can't listen to other people. I mean – you know, if I listened to other people, I would never have my career. And certainly my folks were not, you know, my mom's, she was a performer among many things. She's also a classical pianist. And in fact, she was pregnant with me when she was performing, when she was playing piano. And she was always more into my what I do with my career-wise. You know, concerned, oh, I hope he does well. My dad was less enthusiastic, but then he came to a show, I'd probably been living in New York about 4 or 5 years, maybe 5 years, and he came to a show, my folks came to a show at a club in New York City, and it was a Saturday night, and it was sold out, packed, and it was a really great show. There was a line out the door, and it was a really great, great show. And he never questioned it again after that. I think once he saw what exactly I was doing, I don't know if he had fully understood what it was. My dad he's retired, but he worked for Polaroid for the bulk of his career. He's an engineer, but he made electronics when he was at a different company that were part of like the moon landing. Like I didn't find out about this until I was much older. Like
wow.
So he was involved with that, with electronics for the spacecraft. And then with Polaroid, he would design cameras. He was an engineer. So he was one of the guys that designed the SX-70. It's like the really famous camera that like folds flat and you kind of lift it up by the sides. If you look up S's and Sam, X's and X-ray, SX-70, you'll recognize it immediately. It's like one of the most famous cameras.
Oh, I know it without looking it up. When I was a kid, I had a cousin who was, because we're from the South, we called him Uncle. He was older than most of us.
Okay.
And so Uncle Joe, I don't know why you can't call your first cousin by his real name, but, you know. Anyway, he was an adult. We were children. He had the first camera in the family. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, there were 8 of us. Then, you know, food was scarce and cameras were scarcer. But when he would come visit us from Wisconsin, he'd bring his Polaroid camera. And I got to watch the history of Polaroids through this man. Because the first one he had was that big, long one that accordions out and looks like it's about a foot long.
Uh-huh.
And you know, when he got the SX-70, he was like, come look at this, Mary. This is, you're going to love it. Because I was always fascinated with his cameras. He said, you're going to really like this one. And, you know,
picked
it up. And I'm like, yeah, this is cool.
It's so cool. When I was a little kid, I mean, there's 100 Polaroid cameras in my house, all different types. And when you're a little kid, just even if you're not taking a picture, just holding it and like pushing buttons and playing around, it's just interesting and really cool. I have a few in my place in New York, and my dad still has plenty of them. But
I bet
it's pretty amazing. Like, he's really a really brilliant guy, and my mother is brilliant too in her own way. I mean she, you know, being a musician, and she's an entrepreneur with a variety of things. She was actually a music director at a place called Boston Aid to the Blind, so she did music therapy. She was a certified music therapist, so she did music therapy with elderly blind people. And so, you know, both my folks are brilliant and in very different ways. And my sisters, my older sister that passed, she was a genius. I mean, the by far the most successful person in our family, and she worked in the tech industry and super creative, and I mean, had multiple bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and an MBA. And then my sister, who lives in New York City, is a really successful writer. She's a journalist for the New York Times, and she has written a couple books. Her latest book is called Duped, which is based on the true story of this guy she was engaged to, who was just a total pathological liar. She actually has a podcast, a true crime podcast.
Oh, wow.
It's called Imposters, The Commander, and I believe it's the number one true crime podcast in the country right now. So,
very nice.
Very interesting story. I mean, this guy, and I met the guy. I hung out with this guy one-on-one, and you can't verify anything he's saying, because if he claims to be a Navy SEAL, you can't confirm, you can't Google it. It's all top secret. So if he says he's treating Bin Laden in Guantanamo, I guess I'll just give you the benefit of the doubt, whatever. So, I mean, I had one-on-one dinners with this guy, and, like, he was just, you know, I'm like, all right, I guess you took Bin Laden's temperature up. Don't be a jerk to my sister. Anyway, he was a total liar, and she got a great book out of it. You know, she made lemonade out of
good for her. Good for her.
Yeah.
So you've got this big, gigantic, successful family, and then here you come, and you're just a comedian. No wonder your dad was like,
it's so funny, when I was a little kid in school, if I had the same teachers that my older sisters had, and they would say things like, you know, your sister would never do this, she would do blah, blah, blah. And I remember kind of shrugging my shoulders, like, I don't care, that's them. So I just always wanted to do what I wanted to do. And,
well,
I'm happy for all the success my sisters have had, and that's great. I'm so proud of them. But it's like, I do my thing, and so far so good. It's worked out pretty nicely, you know.
Awesome. And I understand that not only do you play in Aruba and New York and L.A., you also go to Bug Tussle, Kentucky. How in the heck did that happen?
You know, every once in a while, someone will see you. Someone's visiting New York or Aruba, and they, you know, live in a very remote part of the world, and they will say, they'll send you an email, and they'll say, I would love to have you come to my town and do a show. And the first thought is, you know, come on, I'm going to perform for 8 people. And then you find out, you know, that this is the director of a very large insurance agency in a rural, Kentucky or Arkansas or whatever. And, next thing you know, you're flying into Fayetteville and then driving, 3.5 hours to a small town. And, you know, it's great. I like walking into little small, hotels or motels in the middle of nowhere. And I like walking in, and the lady behind the front desk is like, hi, Ray. And I'm like, how do you know my name? She's like, you're the only one staying here tonight. I'm like, what the hell?
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
It's really something. And you're like, do you have televisions? And you're like, yes, we do. I'm like, do you have cable? Like, we certainly do. Channels 2 through 13. All right. You got 11 channels? I'm in. So, you know.
Well, you can probably find something on 11 channels.
You can find something. It could be a lot of infomercials, but, thank goodness for Netflix. Although I have been to places that don't have any internet in there. It's so remote, you know, and that's okay.
Wow.
You know, that's when you read a book, or, you know, you write and you write stuff, or you just, you know, or you do push-ups, whatever you got to do.
Or you listen to Barry Manilow.
Love Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
I learned how to read because my sisters had Barry Manilow albums, and in the liner notes, they had the lyrics. So I learned how to read by, reading the lyrics to Barry Manilow. You hear him saying the words, singing the words, and it's like, you know, you're 3 years old, and you're like, okay, I write the songs. I write the songs that make the whole world sing. All right, great. I learned a sentence. It's very impressive.
Yeah, it is.
I think he's great. I've seen him live. I have a very, like, I love Family Guy, and I love NFL, and I love Barry Manilow. I have a very wide range of taste. Very eclectic, you know. My favorite movie of all time is either Cinema Paradiso or The Godfather or Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, you know. So I have a good mix of stuff. So Manilow I've seen live, and he was terrific. It was a great concert. Big fan.
That's awesome. I remember when I was about 9, my oldest brother had I think it was an exchange student. I don't know if they were in high school together or if it was just a pen pal thing, but she was from Canada, so she spoke French. And he had one of her albums out that she had sent to him, and it was all French on one side, the lyrics, and English on the other side. And that was how I taught myself to speak French. Now I've forgotten everything I learned, but that's okay.
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, my friend Paloma, grew up in Spain, and she learned English by listening to, of all people, by listening to the band UB40.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why that, and you know, but for whatever reason, the group UB40 is how she learned English. So I guess it works for people all over the world, you know, learning one language or the other.
Yeah, I've always heard that music is the key to a foreign language.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Because I think the rhythm, you know, it may sound familiar, especially if it's a song that's been redone in a different language, then you can in your mind, you hear, you know, I write the songs that make the young girls cry, but if it's in Spanish or French or Russian or whatever, you figure it out.
You figure it out, sure, sure. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. It's a great way to learn languages for sure. You know, in fact, I'm never gonna travel to another country again. I'm just gonna stay in New York, and I'm gonna listen to, you know, Juanes. Juanes is a wonderful Latin performer, and you know what? I need to find out who the big stars are, like in Ukraine. You know who I'm friends with? I'm buddies with the ice skater Oksana Bayul.
Really?
You know, she won the gold medal during the Nancy Kerrigan Tanya Harding year.
Yep.
She won the gold, and she's from Ukraine. And we've done a lot of charity work together. She is there's an orphanage that she supports over there. So maybe that's my move. I need to ask her who some great Ukrainian singers are, and then I can learn the language. Maybe that's what I should do.
But you seem like you have finger on the pulse of nonprofit organizations. You've mentioned some.
I think, not to get too heavy, but I do think it feels good to give when you can, as much as you can. And I wish I could make billions of dollars, and I absolutely would just be giving it all away as it was coming in. I mean, it just feels good to try to be philanthropic, and there's a lot of organizations that I've been involved with over the years. There's one that's New York-based called Community Mainstreaming Associates, and they help mentally challenged adults, and we do an event every year. It's been like the past 15, 16 years, you know, a comedy event and a live auction and that sort of thing. And there's just lots of different causes I've been involved with, you know, orphanages, and I like doing things as much as possible for kids. But you know, if it's a meaningful cause and I'm available, then I'll do it. And every once in a while, it's, you never know how life's going to lead. You know, I did some charity, some of these events for the last couple of years, right before the pandemic, for an organization based at Columbia Hospital. And it was like, they have a swallowing institute. It's for people who have trouble swallowing. And you never see
Wow.
that. Yeah, and it's like, it's crucial. I mean, you just eating and swallowing is crucial. So it was me and Josh Groban and Anthony Ramos. I hosted it, and they all sang, and Josh and Anthony and a performer named LaChance, and all Broadway stars from Hamilton and movies and Broadway and films. And it was great. It was really great. So cut to a few months ago, my uncle in California has a nasty fall. He hits his head. Long story short, he can no longer swallow. It's terrible. He had to have a feeding tube. And I, of course, contacted somebody from the Swallowing Institute in New York, and they put me in touch with somebody in California. My uncle went to see them, and as of a week ago, he can now, because if you try to swallow and you can't, things go in your lungs and you suffocate. So
yes.
that's the problem. And they managed to treat him, and now it's crazy. And when I did these events, I never in a million years even thought I was ever going to meet anyone with this problem. I just didn't think about it. I just did it. I was asked to do it. I did it. It sounded like a good cause. And next thing you know, my uncle actually kind of benefited from me.
From your association.
Connecting
the dots.
Crazy.
Craig, I want you to do me a favor. You have my email address.
I do.
I want you, the next time you think of any of these nonprofits that you've worked with, especially the more obscure ones like the Swallowing Institute, I never heard of it. Send me the name. If you've got the link and a phone number or a contact, that would be great. But if not, just send me the name of the organization, because that's
sure.
what Be Unique does. We have, you know, we've got the podcast, we do documentaries, and we are a nonprofit. but our job is basically the magazine that we do, and we write features about these organizations. We have writers in 27 different countries, and today I was just kind of playing around with the map. I was zoning out in my brain and needed something silly to do, and so I was putting virtual thumbtacks on a map to see where everybody is.
Yeah.
And we have people all over the world we basically circle the globe with our volunteer writers. And we love telling stories about these organizations that most people don't even know exist.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. If you think of somebody like that, let me know and I'll follow up on it and we'll start putting them, giving them some.
Thank you. I definitely will.
Yeah. Because what you've mentioned, all the ones that you've mentioned just intrigued me.
They're really good causes, and some of these.
Yeah.
And again, it's like sometimes someone will just kind of see me performing live in a club or a theater, and then they'll contact me after about putting together some kind of event to raise money for something. And we did it on Zoom too. We did Zoom shows that had comedy shows and also pulled in like a live auction, and we raised money for people that certainly during the pandemic that were struggling.
Right.
So I'm
nonprofits really live for their galas and their events to draw people, donors and sponsors in. And when we all were shut down, it was like the shutters were closed. Nothing you can do.
Right. Yeah, totally. Totally.
And you know how short our attention spans are. If we don't see it, we forget about it.
Yes, 1,000%. Yeah, you got to stay right in the forefront of people's brains because there's just too much information coming and going. I was trying to change the settings on my Facebook account. This is totally unrelated, but it just this happened earlier today, and I saw it said to me like there's a notice part on Facebook in the settings. It said, "What do you plan to do with your Facebook account after you pass?" And I'm like, "That is something I've never thought about." I'm like, "I don't know, print out all the data and have it buried with me, or give my login information to Don Cheadle? I don't know. I never really considered."
Why Don Cheadle?
Why not Don Cheadle? Why not? He's done some great work. Loved him in Boogie Nights.
Oh, he's one of my favorite actors. I really
he's
like
terrific.
His stuff. My mom had a Facebook page that she only looked at because I would show it to her. I'd bring the laptop over to her recliner and say, "Hey, here's your Facebook page. This is what people are saying." I'd read off all the birthday wishes or, "Hey, Granny Merle," or whatever it was happened to be going on. And when she passed, I was able to memorialize that page for her. And you can't really add anything more to it, but you can still go and visit it. So I guess that's maybe what they were asking.
Oh, maybe. That's nice. That's nice.
But
I know
people who have died, and I still get birthday notifications for them because they had, I guess they didn't have a plan in place for what are you going to do with your Facebook page after you pass.
Oh, listen, I got something emailed to me saying from like a flower company. It says to me like, "Don't forget, your grandmother's birthday is coming up soon." And like my grandmother would be about 137. So,
yeah.
They're not keeping
Weird true story. We moved into the house that we're in right now about 4 years ago. Up until then, and now my husband and I have been together since 2000. And up until 4 years ago, we never got any mail from anybody for anybody except him and myself. We moved into this house. Now, all of a sudden, we're getting mail for all of his dead relatives. All of them.
Oh, wow.
And they've been dead for 20, 30 years, some of them. His grandmother.
So you think maybe the mail's coming because they hadn't really passed away and they signed up for some sort of promotion.
I figure maybe if nothing else, it's a message from the other side type thing.
Yes.
Couple of days ago, my husband and I got the same email that his grandmother got for hearing aids. I don't know why. He and I are, but we can both, well, most of the time we hear each other pretty well. We can choose not to hear if we don't want to listen.
That worry. My delightful grandma, she really was always like, it was totally selective hearing. I mean, when she wanted to hear, you know, if someone whispered, you know, I have a new boyfriend or I have a new girlfriend, she heard
what?
That.
Oh, yeah.
That she perked up to. But, you know, if it was like, you know, hey, you know, grandma, can I borrow $20? What? And she couldn't hear a thing.
Can't hear you. Don't even know you're in the room.
No, but if some juicy gossip going on, you know,
she
heard it.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So
I
got a question. You're the host still of the Gong Show?
Well, I was the host of the live version of the official Gong Show, the actual Gong Show. The host of the original Gong Show on TV was Chuck Barris.
Yes.
And I met with Chuck, the late Chuck Barris, but when I'd met with him, and he gave me his blessing, which was really exciting for me to host the show.
Yeah.
And that was derailed with the pandemic when I was doing that. There was two things that got derailed with the pandemic. For me personally, one was the Gong Show, and the other one was I was producing a TV show. I was a producer for the show called This Week at the Comedy Cellar on Comedy Central. And we wrapped up the third season right as we were going into lockdown.
Wow.
And then that show needed a live audience to shoot. So, you know, once the pandemic kind of, you know, everyone got entrenched in that, you know, shows, production stopped. And it's too bad because the ratings were getting better and better each season, and we did three seasons. There was lots of great comics on it, and the Comedy Cellar is like an iconic venue. And I work there mostly if I'm in New York, that's where I perform every Friday and Saturday, pretty much. The Comedy Cellar in Greenwich Village, and so the pandemic for me, that's the two work things it took away: the Gong Show, which was so much fun. And,
I can only imagine.
And the TV show, but you know, one door closes, another one opens, and we'll see. The Gong Show, maybe that'll come back, you know, because again, you're performing in theaters in front of big audiences, and now Broadway just recently opened up again. So, but that was certainly, the Gong Show was really fun, and you know, if you're ever in New York City, you got to swing by the Comedy Cellar. You never know. I mean, if no household names show up, it's still an amazing show because all the comedians are great. But, like,
right.
You know, Ray Romano shows up and Amy Schumer and, you know, Dave Chappelle and Tracy Morgan. And it's like all sorts of people will just swing by and go on stage. Madonna once performed one night, which
really?
Was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. It was surreal.
So they just walk in the door and say, I'm next up there.
Well, I don't know. It's quite... I'm next. Maybe they'll say, you know, they'll say to another comedian, do you think, you know, could I get on stage? Or if someone like Ray Romano, as he filmed this special there, and he's performed there for years, even before his sitcom. And Ray, he's one of my favorite comedians, and he's an excellent human being. And, if he walks in, it's certainly like, you know, it's expected. And Ray's so funny. I was hosting a show when I was at the Comedy Cellar. And Ray does like, you know, maybe 20 minutes, and I go on stage, and he whispered in my ear, and he was dead serious. He said, he's like, did I go too long? Was that okay?
And
I'm
like,
yes, Ray, it was fine. You didn't go too long.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Just even thought of that. Like so many, you know, huge stars wouldn't even think of that. And he was actually thinking like, you know, did I make the show go too long? Did I mess it up? Did anyone get bumped?
Yeah.
He's a really sweet guy. He's great.
He was.
He's awesome. And if you watch his latest Netflix special, he has me bring him up on stage, actually, which was a fun surprise. I didn't know I was going to do that. So it was pretty cool.
When I finish this show, it's my habit to go find Netflix and my cat.
What do you like to watch with your cat?
Whatever I feel like. Let's see what we were watching. Last night we were watching a series called Maid.
Okay.
About a young woman who escaped domestic violence, but nobody believed her because it was just emotional violence. And then, oh, God, what was... Oh, I think it was on Amazon Prime. I get those two confused because I don't care.
Karen, did you watch the show? I watched everything during the pandemic. Did you watch Outlander? Did you watch that show?
Oh, my God. I've read all the books, and I watched the show.
Okay. I watched it, too, and I had to get to the end, at least of all the episodes they've made so far, because there's going to be more. And
yeah.
I can't decide if I loved it or hated it, because it's a little ridiculous in some way. I mean, the woman, she's a time-traveling surgeon who looks like a supermodel. And she has the nerve at one point to say to her colleague, Joe, tell me, am I attractive? Like, come on, knock it off. I mean, you're better looking than everybody in the hospital. You're better looking than everybody in the past and the present. So just knock it off. You've been in 1750 and 1950, and no one looks as good as you. You got a lot of nerve asking that question.
Well, women have low self-esteem that they put on themselves sometimes. But I there were times, the first season I absolutely loved. And if they'd have stopped it there, I'd have been okay. I want more, but I'll survive. Kind of like the Game of Thrones. But
love Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Huge,
you know,
Game
of
Thrones.
They're doing something now, kind of a prequel.
Oh yeah.
To the Game of Thrones.
It's going to
be
very excited.
I am too. The Mad
King.
Want to
hear something crazy? This is unbelievable. I'm not usually into sci-fi or fantasy shows and like shows about dragons and that. And I also don't like shows that are like super violent. So I never watched Game of Thrones, and enough people said it was so amazing that after they had six seasons done, which is 60 episodes, I was like, you know what? Let me watch this thing. And I got sucked right in, and I watched the first six seasons, 60 hours of TV. I watched it in 8 days. And in the middle of my binge, I took a break. I said, you know what? Let me take a shower. Let me have a normal meal. And I went to the restaurant right downstairs in my building. And I walked in, and sitting at the bar is the best part of the best show ever, Peter Dinklage, Tyrion Lannister.
I knew you were going to say Peter Dinklage. I love him in anything he's done.
He's amazing. And he's sitting at the bar, and I walked in, and I thought I was hallucinating. I mean, I watched... You know, I said to him, I said, hey, you know, my name is Ray. I live upstairs. He's like, wow, you really traveled far to have a meal. I'm like, yeah. And I said, I'm in the middle of a binge. I've watched, you know, I've watched 45 episodes in the past 5 days. He goes, yeah, your eyes look a little messed up. And he was very nice. And then I wanted to say to him, what are you doing sitting in this bar? You are supposed to be sailing to Westeros with Khaleesi. How can you be here? But of course I wouldn't say that, because I would really seem like a lunatic. But
well, then you would seem like you don't know anything about the industry.
Exactly. But he was very nice, and it was amazing to run into him in the middle of the binge, and it was very
that
exciting.
Would have been surreal.
It was great.
Yeah.
And I did a podcast for the latter part of Game of Thrones with my buddy Kurt, and it was called Sunday Night's Watch, and it was a lot of fun. That was totally a labor of love, just to get on a microphone and just gossip about Game of Thrones. I mean, I was just like, I think my two favorite shows of all time could be Game of Thrones and Little House on the Prairie. It's really remarkable how I can swing in either direction. Little House on the Prairie is just a great feel good, easy show to take in. You know, you watch reruns from the 70s, and it's great. I consider myself I'm a self-proclaimed prairie head.
What is that girl, Nellie?
Nellie Olson, sure. She's played by Alison Arngrim.
She's the only thing about Little House on the Prairie that isn't wonderful, lovely, and fuzzy.
Well, her mother Harriet Olson wasn't exactly a real treat.
Oh,
but
true.
Yeah, but I know I am so hooked on that show. A friend of mine from my birthday, I mean, and obviously, I mean, it's a little preposterous. I'm not like a psychopath about it, but my friend of mine got me an autographed a headshot by Nellie, by Alison Arngrim, the actress who plays her.
That's cool. That's
my birthday.
Cool.
It's on my friend, and I don't know if I could say this on your show, but she wrote, to Ray, happy birthday from one bitch to another.
I love it, yeah.
Well, so that's a great show.
See, the beautiful thing about this show is it's unscripted. You can say whatever you want. It's It's live. I'm not going to edit anything out, and people love it when I just say, yeah, sure, you can say fuck. It's okay.
Oh, if I had known that, I would have been so filthy this whole time. But oh well. Actually, that friend of mine I told you about, the one who I said learned English by watching UB40. She's actually listening, and just now she sent me a text saying, "I can't believe you are so clean on this show." All right, there you go.
Oh man, I'm gonna have to have you come back.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Paloma. I wasn't dirty enough.
But you know, we're supposed to be a family-rated show, and I throw out the F-bomb, as you hear, from time to time, and a couple of other letters, too. I don't have a problem with it, but we do have some people who are aghast when I say those things. And it's okay. They're aghast when I eat certain foods, too.
You know what's interesting? I did a show once at a college in New Mexico, and they said to me, you know, you could pretty much do whatever you want, you know, don't go too crazy. And I think I cursed 3 times during the hour that I performed. And afterwards, the faculty advisor he came over to me, whatever, and I said, that was fine, right? Everything was okay. And I'd never heard the expression F-bomb before. And he said to me, he goes, you know, you really walked the line there. I think you had a few too many F-bombs. And I said to him, I go, what the fuck is an F-bomb? And he said, exactly.
I love it. Yeah. Years ago, I was working for a newspaper as their office manager and editor and blah, blah, blah. And we had brought in some teenagers for the summer. I guess they were like summer interns or something. And they were across the hall from me with their back to me, and they were being boys, just 16-year-old boys doing what boys do. And they threw out an F, you know, and they turned around and, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I said, what the fuck is wrong with you little fuckers saying fuck in front of fucking me? Who the fuck do you think you fucking are? Well, I could do no wrong after that. Those kids thought that I was like the coolest person in the building. And that's because I was.
That's really something. I love you.
I have been waiting an hour to ask you about Rocky.
Oh, Rocky the Bulldog?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I had a bulldog with my ex-girlfriend, Jean. I don't think I've talked about this publicly, but that was the best ending to a relationship that could possibly ever happen. Like, this is just a wonderful human being, and she has married with kids now, and I'm so happy for her. But it was a great relationship, and anyway, we had a dog together, Rocky the Bulldog, who was so sweet. And I remember really sweet. I'm just an amazing. I was on the board of an animal rescue for a little while. And part of what inspired me to do it was just because Rocky just really just moved me so much. But we had to get him fixed. Had to get his little doggy balls cut off, you know. And the vet said you do that because it'll prevent things like testicular disease. And I was like, wow, testicular disease. Well, let's just chop off his paw so we won't get athlete's foot. You know, what are we talking about? So
yeah.
the vet goes, if you want, just so your dog won't miss them, you can get little implants, little
no way
doggy ball implants. They're called nudicles. And I said to the vet, I looked at him like I was kind of creeped out by the fact just getting fake balls for my dog. So I looked at the vet and I said, Doc, tell me. I kind of stared right in his eyes and I said, Doc, tell me these fake balls. Do they feel like real ones? And he looked at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you know, like if they're resting on my chin, do they feel like they're real? And he was like, listen, dude, you should have goldfish. You should not have a dog. It was a very disturbing moment.
Can my dog continue to teabag me?
Exactly.
He's thinking you are such a weirdo. But I guess if a woman has a mastectomy and she has a breast implant, they can give a dog nut implants. I don't know.
Yes, I guess they could, but I don't know if that's a good analogy. Come on, Mary. A woman who has to go through that such a terrible traumatic thing and versus the
that's
dog.
Pretty traumatic for
well, I guess it's traumatic
too.
For the dog, but you know, the dog had no say in the matter. If he only could have talked, he would have said,
yeah,
"Get your filthy hands off me, you damn dirty human."
What is wrong with you? You're standing here. I'm right here, buddy, and you're talking about my testicles and what were they? Nudicles?
Nudicles.
Nudicles. Oh man. So I'm guessing Rocky didn't get new nudicles.
Nope, he did not, and he was fine. He lived a wonderful, long, beautiful life, and he touched everybody who came in his way.
I was touched looking at the pictures of him. I love bulldogs anyway. My dream dog was going to be an English Mastiff until my husband said, "Fine, you've got pooper scooper duty." And then I realized that was not what I wanted to do. So we got a house cat, and I still have pooper scooper duty. But it's a little easier.
That's a lot easier.
Yeah. Ray, you're a delight. Don't forget to send me names of those nonprofits. I really want to know some of the ones that you've worked with.
I will.
Yeah.
Good. Well, and anyone out there wants to learn more of anything, please go to comedycloud.co or arubacomedy.com, and you can also go to raycomedy.com, and that'll get you everything you need to know about everything super important in the world.
Awesome. And if you want to come back and talk dirty with me, we're booking in August of 2022.
All right. Fabulous. I'm already licking my lips.
Start improving that vocabulary. Get all those F-bombs and the UCK-bombs coming right behind them.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. A lot of fun.
We can always set the show ratings so that they don't, so kids can't just tune in. You've been a delight. You've been a delight.
Thank
and you,
you thank
did
you.
Make me laugh. You said you weren't sure you could pull that off, but you made me chuckle a time or two.
I'm
appreciate
so proud
it.
Of my- Thank
yeah,
you.
I'm proud of you, too.
Thanks.
Good night, Ray.
Have a good one.
Thank you. You, too.
All righty.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.